Hey y'all, this is Mike Davison, and creating a little podcast here. This podcast is going to be called Hip Hop and the Amplification of Anti-Police Sentiment. That's basically our subject matter, not really the podcast, but I've got with me a guest and a good friend of mine that he's kind of distant from me now as far as, you know, geography-wise, but we stay in touch, and I've welcomed him on as a guest for this podcast, and we're gonna go through some questions and some conversation here, and I hope y'all enjoy. My friend, his name Dan. He was an officer with me over in a metropolitan area here in Texas. There, with, you know, where we worked within an inner city and stuff like that. So he has a little bit of experience there. He also worked with me in a different department, more of a suburban, you know, type police department, municipality, that kind of thing. And so he was an officer before. He's not an officer now. I think he brings a very unique perspective to the conversation, and so that's my reason for picking him as a guest. First of all, Dan, welcome.
Hey, thank you.
Are you familiar with that song from Lil Baby, "The Bigger Picture"?
Yes, sir, I am. I am.
What do you think about that song?
I actually like that song.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do you think that you like about it? I mean, what stands out to you, if you could recall?
It sounds more of a unification song than it is a division. Understanding that the person himself, him rapping his story, and from what he knows in his neighborhood, inside of the verses, he's saying, you know, this happened or that happened. This is what we saw. Y'all supposed to be here to help us, whatever. But in his chorus, which most people, you know, listen to the chorus of the song, he's saying it's bigger than black and white.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I really like the unification part of that versus looking into the negative of, you know, his cries or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that song had a big impact on me. And I think part of it is my journey overall, and the fact that I intentionally listen to voices from the other side and take time to listen to people and hear about the injustice and that can happen out there. And because of that, I think that songs like that can have a bigger impact on me than someone that might be a little bit more closed-minded, closed off to the conversation, or a little bit more barricaded in with their own, you know, their own ideology sometimes. But I really like the song. I like the fact that, you know, he doesn't put blame fully on one side or the other. And basically he just says, you know, we got to start somewhere, and we might as well start here. Right. Mm-hmm. And so kind of the theme of some of the research that I've been doing and even this podcast has to do with that starting somewhere theme, and here opening up conversations, being part of that starting somewhere. I had a few questions to run through with you real quick, but before we do that, you know, just real briefly, I mean, tell me about your experience of being a police officer as a black man. Just a little bit.
I wanted to write a book about it. It was definitely a strange, tough, grueling journey for me. I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and it's mainly urban, you know. And so a lot of my friends are from those neighborhoods. So as soon as I signed the papers and signed on the dotted line, I lost friends just based on what I chose to do in my life. As I got to the department and inside of the department, it was as if I was sitting dead center on the fence, you know. On the left, I'm wrong because, hey, you're a black man, you police. On the right, I'm wrong because I know people from the hood. I talk to people in the neighborhood. So, you know, that's a lot of reason why I'm not there now, is because I just got tired of the stress of both sides of it and the challenges of just sitting in the middle.
I think it'd be kind of a rhetorical question if I just asked, do you think that's fair or not? Because I don't think it is fair. I don't think it's fair, at least in my opinion, that sometimes black men are called Uncle Toms or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, they choose a career in law enforcement, where ultimately I think they want to make their communities better. They want to add. I mean, can imagine a world where there is nothing but police officers being white, because nobody wants to be a police officer but white people, mm-hmm. and expect that kind of, you know, situation to be understanding, empathetic, relate anything with the black community if that's the way it was. So I can't really have it that way. You have to have a diversity within the police department to reflect the diversity of, you know, the community that you serve, or you underserve them completely.
Huh? Most definitely. Most definitely. That's where we came from.
No,
you know,
no.
If you think back to the 40s and the 50s, it wasn't many black cops out there, if any. So no, right. not to say that every cop was racist back then, or that cops are even racist, period, but you just had a whole department looked a certain way. And hey, how do you know my slangs? How do you know when I'm sad? How do you know when I'm whatever if you've never dealt with me?
Right.
You
Absolutely.
Know, coming
I
from.
I think that was one of the things.
I'm sorry.
That was one of the things I reflected on whenever I, you know, coming from Fort Worth, or, you know, I guess I'm telling you where I'm from, but coming from Fort Worth and then, and being an officer within another city nearby, we'll just go ahead and say Dallas. I was in a school that was, you know, basically half and half. So it's not like I came from this country neighborhood where I never lived around or dealt with, you know, anybody of different backgrounds or diversity or anything like that. But coming into a position where I was serving, working within a community that was completely different than mine, did change in the narrative a little bit, because I had to learn quickly that, you know, different cultures, different backgrounds of people, different, even a black person from the country versus a black person from the hood behave mm-hmm. differently. And they mm-hmm. have different attitudes towards police. Mm-hmm. And you come into a situation where everybody's excited, everybody's, you know, upset, you know, and that's in certain cultures, that's just the way they react to a certain situation. It's
right.
not anything to do with being violent. It's not anything to do with being escalated. And then you have an officer who's had it ingrained in him in the academy that you go into a situation and you control it and you do this and you do that and you put people where you, you know, you got to put them and stuff. And without, you know, reflecting on the fact that you've got to handle each situation a little differently and within different communities differently, it comes off as already an abrasive situation where nobody's going to hear each other. You
That's
know?
Correct. That's correct. And that was just what I was about to speak on, is that I'm from Alabama. And moving to Texas and being a police officer in Texas, it was a culture shock dealing with other black people, being black, you know, yeah. coming from one urban neighborhood to another. I didn't know what a tea lady was or a tea Jones. So culturally, I'm already behind, and I wear the same, you know, uniform as you, and I wear the same skin color as some people in the neighborhood. But I was totally lost just based on where I come from in the country. So coming there and somebody saying, hey, my tea lady, that, you know, what are you talking about, man? It was a barrier there just based on where I come from.
Did you feel any racial tension within the department or any department that you've ever been in for being a black man versus any other race? Do you think that you felt any?
From the police department? Most definitely. Most definitely.
Do you think you can reflect on that a little bit, and how, I mean, just, you know, I know you got a book to write, so I don't want to give too many spoilers here, but I mean, what stands out to you as far as how you felt trying to be a black officer within a highly dominated white culture, I guess?
When I went to my second department, had a situation, and I don't want to put too much out there because there's people that know this situation, but had a situation where I left the metro area, went out to the suburbs. And when I got out there to the suburbs, you know, a guy said, hey, we can pull this car over. And I said, well, why? You know, he said, well, because they look like they're doing something. Well, I'm on training. So while on training, you need to do what you're told. And so I you know, sir, I don't mean no disrespect, but that's kind of profiling, right? Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Go ahead and do it. Make the stop, find, you know, yeah, this happened. Make the stop, something comes of it, and I'm questioning the guy like, hey, we can't do that. That's not what we're supposed to be able to do. That's not how it works. And, you know, it was, I got chastised for that. I got chastised and wrote up in my, you know, my daily on, you know, my performance, because I'm questioning the trainer, but that's clearly racial profiling.
Did you ever bring it up, just out of curiosity, did you ever bring it up to anybody?
Oh, no, sir.
Okay. And why would you feel that you didn't bring it up? What about the culture made you not bring it up?
Because it almost worked the same on both sides. You know what they say about snitches? It's the same in the police world. You don't rat on your brother.
Absolutely.
And so, you know,
part of what I'm doing, man, is that exact thing. It's about, you know, I call it code breaking, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know, same thing within the department. The wall of silence is on both sides, man. And and you're exactly right about that whole thing. Snitches get stitches on either side, and it's ridiculous, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Overall, your experience as a police officer, would you classify it as positive or negative?
Ooh, I have not asked myself that question, but I don't have a desire to ever do it again.
Right.
I would go back into the military again. I would meet a lot of those guys again. But the police world, I just don't have that desire to go back.
I have that same sentiment, man, because, you know, there's more of a brotherhood in the military than there is within the police department.
Most definitely.
And we treat each other more as equals, you know.
Yes, sir.
And you know, I've noticed that as well. Even though, you know, within police departments, you have that military element of, you know, brotherhood that rears its head every once in a while in small ways, but it doesn't even come close to the same.
No fair.
And so I agree with you on that, man. I think we got a lot in common to talk about, you know, in later podcasts on that. Let me get to a couple of the questions that I have actually set up, because all those questions weren't even on here. As a non-police officer, before or after, what would be a negative police experience that you've encountered? Or do you have a significant story to tell about that?
I got a lot of them, man. I'm going to go with the lightest one of all of them, because it's the shortest story. When I was a teenager, me and my buddy would come to my house in the morning before we go to school and play video games before school started. And so one of these days we got too far into the game and took us past our time. So we head out the door to go to school. And down here we didn't have truancy as it works today, where you get picked up and taken to school or wherever. The police would just show up and make you go to school. Well, we were walking down the train tracks to get to school, and a white police officer stopped us. Hey, what are y'all doing? Say, we're heading to school. And, you know, just at the time, we got patted down. We got, you know, got put on the car, legs spread it. Pretty much, I felt violated as a young man. I didn't know, you know, no better at the time, but just getting searched on the way to school. And he told us we were lying, we weren't going to school. And you know, I didn't understand why he thought we was lying. The school was right in front of us. We were heading in that direction. And we had our book bags, and we were going to the school, and he just would not believe us. And so he called our parents. And my mom said, well, no, he goes to school, you know, and he ended up letting us go, you know, after the situation. But after that, I felt as if it's nothing I can do to tell the truth. Like, what did I do wrong? We were a little late. It wasn't past time to be to school. It was just a little bit, you know, we were running late to school. So if school started at 8, it's 7:55 and we need to be there. And he know it, you know, we probably won't make it on time, but we're heading that way.
Right. And was it your first negative experience with police or an early one?
That was the lightest one I could give you. The first experience, it wasn't me personally, but I watched a guy get his eye knocked out of his head, you know, by getting beat up by the police.
Man, that's absolutely horrible. Boy. That's too deep, man. That's a lot. But we got to cover some of that, man, because that's the truth of it. I mean, that gets to, you know, I remember you even telling me a story one time about how you had a negative experience as a police officer being mm-hmm. jacked up by the police.
Yes. On my beat, two blocks from my home. On the beat, I worked the beat that I lived on. I worked the beat that I lived on because I wanted to protect my neighborhood. Right. And I took a vacation day that day. You know, I'm off work, and that story, it's more emotional than anything I've ever had done to me outside of being a police, because you know my face. We sit in the same detail, literally at the same time. I'm just not there today because I took a vacation day. Wow. And the way I got treated is embarrassing.
Man, that's rough, Dan. That's rough, man.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I think you've given us a good base of the fact that this is something that is a very common experience for Black men in America, for Black men within the city, definitely within the country, you know, where there's not, you know, a lot of people represented in their community and stuff. But even within the inner city where they live, where they're policed by, you know, a lack of diversity sometimes, or even by other officers that just can't, that have lost that empathetic tune to their, you know, to their soul, where they recognize and understand, you know, where people come from, and they've kind of divorced themselves from it too. Would you say that's true, that you see this same kind of thing going on all across America, especially the South, but not even just the South? That it happens all across America. I mean, would you think that would be the case?
Oh, most definitely. At this point, I think it's us or nobody. It within every pocket, you know, it's us or nobody. If you're not blue, you know, if you're not Black, if you're not from the hood, wherever you from, if it's us or nobody.
Do you believe that being a Black man in the blue uniform, that you adopt one or the other, that you start being blue instead of being Black too, or that's a constant, you know, struggle within?
My first few years on the department, yes, most definitely. I you lose yourself. I mean, everybody around you, and I will say this about the department that I was on, they said, hey, get friends outside of here, you know, to keep you relating to the world. And I didn't do that when I first got on. So I was surrounded by blue, and you know, some things that I would see wrong, or that the world would see wrong, I didn't see it as wrong. Well, he shouldn't have done this. Well, if he didn't do that, this wouldn't happen. Oh, that kind of conversation.
Or he might not be going to jail. He might be going to jail for this, and he didn't really do it, but he's done something else, so he gets that, right?
Right. Oh, yes, all the time. Hey, you got away with a million other things. It's just your day-to-day, even though the cop may be wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Do you think that experience as a Black man in America spills out into why we have anti-police rhetoric in rap music?
I think it's a combination of things, to be honest.
What do you think?
I think that portion is a portion of it. It's what's taught in the hood now. You know, when I grew up, you know, my mom works for the police department still to this day, but she told me how to handle a police officer. And I found that funny. Why do I need to treat this man differently than I treat this one if he approaches me? And it's for your life, you know. Well, you don't talk back to him, but you tell me go out into the streets and fight anybody that opposed me. Well, to go back to what I'm saying, it's a culmination of things. You got things that's being taught about police that may or may not be true. Headlines that read certain stories feeds into that. And then the police themselves. Well, you wrote a song about police. Well, it's us or nobody. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So
have you ever found yourself in a position, because you know, if you have a parent that was a police officer, maybe not as much, but were you related to the kind of the fuck the police narrative that can be in rap music sometimes?
Growing up, yeah, that's I mean, yes, most definitely. My mom's not a cop. She does the bells and the bonds. But she has a badge. They gave her an honorary badge. You can't tell her she ain't the police now, but, I did grow up in that household, but it was still around me, my cousins, everybody that I knew that wore my skin colors said, you know, fuck the police.
Right. How much of that do you think comes from experience with aggressive tactics by the police that tends to target the black man? And how much of it do you think comes from just, you know, wanting to live a thug lifestyle and, you know, fuck the police, you know, get out of my business and let me do my life?
What's the statistics on how many criminals there are per whatever? It's 10% of the population, right?
Right.
So it's 10% of the people that has to deal with the police all the time. The other 40 is hearsay.
Right.
And I do believe that. I don't believe everybody feels that way. I don't think that that relationship is as tarnished as it, you know, it's not as tarnished as it could be. It's not as good as it should be, but I don't think everybody really feels that way. Most people, the social media and stuff like that, they're, you know, they've never dealt with police, but they got something to say, you know. Or they've never been in the situation in reverse, but they have something to say. So it looks a lot worse on those lines, I think. I do believe that I just don't believe that it's on 100 right now. You know what I mean?
Right. You kind of your voice went down a little bit, but what I really got from it was that it's yes and no kind of. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously there is an element of people writing rap music that either, you know, are involved in criminal activity or at least pose to be, you know, of that life or supporting it or something like that. But I think if I heard you right, you said that you don't really think that everybody has that attitude from the offset, right?
No, sir. I don't believe that personally.
Do you think that the negativity that's in rap music and on the media headlines and things like that, because I know, just like you said, you talked about the snitches get stitches. That's kind of a code you're taught within, you know, your community, and same thing within the police community from the get-go, that, hey, you know, stick to the script, stick to where you're at, you know, don't be, you know, don't communicate with the other side almost, right? Would you say that mm-hmm. that's true?
Yes, sir. Oh, yes.
Do you think that rap music plays a role at all in creating a negative outlook on who the police are and what they're about?
Yes, about 50-50. So some yes, some no. There's some positive rap out there. There's some rap out there that does not give that negative stigma to police, but it's a lot of it that I think does as well.
How influential do you think it is on young minds and their attitude towards police?
Oh man, out of 100, I'd go 98%.
Why do you think that is?
Coming from where I come from. So you live in the neighborhood, you only see what you see. So who has the money? The drug dealers, the rappers, and the basketball players. So I want the money. I want the girls. I want the cars. So automatically you're going to cling to, you know, what you think you should be doing to get to where you need to go. So if you're going to listen to that, you're going to hear that. So that's why.
Do you think that even if they've ever had a negative experience in their own right, like if they've ever gone through anything you've gone through, let's say they've not, let's say they've been raised in the suburbs. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they still feel this drawing, like you said, that connection to that kind of life, you know, that. Do you think that young thought and young minds can have a negative outlook towards police just because of the music they listen to? And I'm talking about anti-police rhetoric. I'm not just talking about clapping butts and you know, and whatever. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of there's all kinds of negative, you know, misogyny or whatever within rap, all kinds of different things within rap. But I'm specifically talking about not necessarily attitude towards women or, you know, anything like that, but towards police specifically. Do you think that it molds young minds at all as far as their outlook on who the police are and not to trust them, that kind of thing?
Yes, sir. I do.
Do you think it keeps a lot of young black men from ever aspiring to, or even black women from ever aspiring to be a police officer?
That, I don't know. I listened to rap. I listened to rap when I was young, and I had that fuck the police mentality, but I wanted something different for the neighborhood. I wanted to go in and say, hey, it's somebody that's for you, you know? Right. So personally, I don't know if it really sways whether or not you want to be police. Maybe so. I don't know. I would think maybe so, because you can't be a police and represent black people, if you will.
Right.
Yeah.
How impactful do you think, I mean, how easy it is for you to break that mold? How easy is it for you to, you know, just see rap music as entertainment? I mean, yeah, I mean, I believe it's an artistic expression against some of the societal ills by all means, and systematic racism and everything else that's out there. I think it's a necessary art. But I mean, how hard do you think it is to break the mold, to actually want to make a difference by being someone to add to that narrative by changing that mold, by changing how people are treated within their communities and stuff, by stepping out and doing what's necessary to keep communities safe, but at the same time, staying connected to your roots and where you come from and who you are?
Physically, it's easy, but systematically, yeah, it's impossible.
Impossible. Wow.
Almost. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so.
And that's just
physically, yes. Huh?
Do you think that's a leadership thing? Do you think that comes from the top on what needs to change within police community, within the police culture? I mean, where do you think that kind of change can come from?
I think it's from everybody. I think from every single person, from the lowest person on the police department to the highest, the person riding around in the squad car, and you saw officers get out and play basketball. You know what I mean? You've seen this and that, but the system of it don't seem to change for people. So that's why I say physically easy. I can get out of my squad car and shoot hoops with anybody. But can I promise these dudes they won't be stopped, you know, for nothing in the next 2-3 minutes? No, I can't.
Wow.
So that's kind of why I said physically, yes, easy, but systematically, almost impossible.
You know, Killer Mike, you're familiar with Killer Mike, right?
Oh, yes, sir.
I mean, I've always loved Killer Mike. I love Run the Jewels and stuff, and I love the intelligent mind that Killer Mike and the narrative that he adds to this discussion as well. Even some of his lyrics can be very, you know, anti-police and, you know, kill the police and let the Lord sort them kind of thing, you know, as far mm-hmm. as whether they're crooked, bad or not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he had an interview with Vlad TV, it's a video blog.
I know about Vlad, yeah.
Cool. Have you ever seen any of his interviews on there?
I haven't seen any of Killer Mike's interviews on there, but I've seen him interviewed, and
man,
I know his take
amazing.
On it.
They're mm-hmm. worth the watch, man, for real. Mm-hmm. He had one that I was seeing on there where he kind of talked about this subject a little bit, and Killer Mike said basically that it's gotten worse out there, whereas in the past, police would pick up a black guy, you know, with drugs or whatever, beat his ass, take his drugs away, and send him back on his way, you know, not give him a criminal record, not, you know, or whatever, to where it's deteriorated into a situation where now we're killing people, killing mm-hmm. black men. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but that the whole police culture has become where black men are like an animal to be hunted, you know, like they're the enemy, like they're super villains. To be hunted, and that we go out there on shift, you know, with that mentality. How much of do you think that resonates with what you think?
To use the word hunted, I think that's a bit much, but I think targeted would be my choice of word. I've rode in the car with a certain officer that has said things, and I couldn't understand for the life of me what he meant until I got older and mature. And he would say, we just pull people over here in this neighborhood because this is where we get the good stuff. And so that's targeting to me, not necessarily hunting, because I would not want to think that they want our heads on a platter. Hard to debate it, but I would rather use the word targeted, and I agree in the sentiment of what he's saying.
See, hunted indicates that you're going to try and kill him, right?
Right.
Whereas targeted means that we're going after a certain group because we know they got the good stuff, or we know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I think it would be true to say also that, you know, in those certain situations with those certain officers, that a black man's more likely to go to jail than someone of a different race, even if they committed the same offense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true?
Yes, sir.
What would be your idea of, because like I said, that, you know, I started off the episode with talking about Lil Baby and that song, you know, the bigger picture. I believe even within rap and within the police culture, everything else, that we do have to start somewhere, that we've got to begin to see each other differently, that we've got to begin to value life in a way that is equal, you know, and even if you are a knucklehead when you're young or whatever, that it doesn't devalue your life. You know, you might be misdirected. You might be growing up in a different situation. You might be growing up without a dad. You might be growing up in a community where you're encouraged to do things that you might not even inside want to do, but you know, what else do you have? And, mm-hmm. or what else do you see as a hope and movement or whatever? Mm-hmm. I mean, where would you think? Because to me, the starting place is evaluation of life. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, just to ask you and put it out there, I mean, where would you think would be a good starting place for changing this a little bit, for bridging this big chasm that we have between the police culture and the black community culture?
I thought that the police department was onto it when they started the NPO programs, the neighborhood policing. But again, like you said, and like Killer Mike said, it hadn't gotten better. So I thought about this myself, and I said, well, let's try the schools. You know, let's go into the schools. And so that hasn't done anything. We got police in almost every school now. So now where I am is the leadership of individual situations have to be told and showed how they have to be showed the other side. They have to have an understanding mind on how the other person lives and how to make better for everybody by looking at the other side. Right. You know, politics, it's in politics now. So it's a little girl wrote a letter to Biden or Trump or somebody back during the election about this kind of stuff. So people are looking at our leadership. Even the kids, they're looking at the leadership. If your parent is telling you black people is crazy, you're going to believe that black people is crazy.
Right.
So from the leadership on down, it has to change.
Do you think
it has to start at the top?
You're right. No, I agree. I absolutely agree. Do you think that the way black men and black women carry themselves have an element of fear for officers, for people of other races or anything else? Do you think there's anything to be said about that at all?
Yes, sir. That's why I was saying earlier, me being from Birmingham and going to Dallas, you know, I when I get nervous, I beat my hands together, you know, pound my fists, not because I want to fight, but because I'm nervous, or right. Chew on my fingernails or whatever you do. If you're not aware of what that is and you think it's a threatening gesture, there's a problem already.
Yeah, you're right.
So I don't know if that's an educational thing. I don't know what to say about that, but
I think it is. I think honestly it is. And, you know, I told you from the beginning of this that one of the things that I did intentionally that's changed my outlook is I exposed myself not only to the lyrics within rap music for actual regard of what's being said and what they're referring to and what are the attitudes and issues and where they're rooted at, where they're coming from. But also, you know, to different literature, you know, of books that have been written about the subject and things like that. You know, I've taken it upon myself to educate myself.
Mm.
And it's completely changed my outlook and my perspective on it. And, you know, I guess it can make you a bit of an activist when you see that nothing's changing, when mm-hmm. you see that injustice continues regardless and despite it. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is educational. I think part of it is people taking responsibilities within whatever community they're in, you know, with the good and the bad and the ugly. And I think it's part of it, you know, part of it is having difficult conversations, but from a place to where we actually understand each other. And if you don't take the time to educate yourself on what the other side's all about, then you will never have a perspective where you can see where it is we're ever going to reach a compromise and a change within to bridge the communities.
Gotcha.
And to bridge, you know, bridge the people that police them as well.
I want to add something too. So, yeah. You know, they don't know who I am personally, but I'm a 6'1", 285-pound black dude with tattoos on my arm.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how not to carry myself. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. I don't know, to answer your question thoroughly, if that is a thing, I don't know how to not do it.
Well, you would be intimidating and you know, within different neighborhoods, within different situations, you have to carry yourself like you're a badass because you don't want people to fuck with you, right? I mean, I get it. I mean, they call it in within prisons and jails, they call it ugly face or whatever they want to call it, where you got to carry, you know, a certain face on you and composure where, you know, don't, you know, you might be scared to death, but you're not going to show that.
That's correct. But also, you know, I've been in the military. I've always been a guy that has been intimidating, if you will. And right. And everybody that knows me know I'm soft as a teddy bear. You know, I wouldn't do nothing to hurt nobody, but I don't know how not to carry myself. You know, I guess I'm mad dog when I'm out there. I don't know. I'm just doing my thing and it ain't to hurt nobody. It ain't to intimidate nobody. I don't want nobody to fear me. Nobody, not even in the hoods. I try to show love. So I don't want you to feel me or think that I'm threatening in no kind of way.
I agree. And it can be dangerous if people who shouldn't be police officers or people who don't have a confidence or whatever, you know, see whether it's your look, your demeanor, or your actions, you could be upset. It doesn't matter, whatever, like you said, the pound in the fist kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they're automatically going to jump to, I got to put this guy on the ground. I got to control him. I got to tase him. I got to, you know, whatever, you know, or draw a gun on you or something like that. And I think it's asinine. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that if we're going to have officers in there that fear like that, where they take a black man's life without any consideration of anything, like the guy reaching for his phone or whatever, and sit there and be able to articulate that they feared for their life. I mean, what do they fear? What are they in fear of?
Because, well, I guess I would ask the question, how many black officers are shooting and killing on, you know, is it close?
I mean, I'd have to look at the statistics on that, but you're right. I mean,
what makes you more afraid and not this guy?
Yeah.
Being placed in the same situation.
Yeah. I think there's certain, even when there's not explicit racism, Dan, I think there is a certain prejudice that comes within people that don't understand another people or another culture or anything like that, that can bleed into anything that you do and the judgments that you make, you know, whether it's an old lady neighbor that judges me thinking that I'm something this or that because, you know, they don't even know me, but they've already made these characterizations because I haven't conformed to a certain sort of behavior or look or whatever.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm arguing now on my side of things. Cause I just want peace on both sides. So what I'm telling on my side is, hey man,
you become a docile teddy bear out there, you know, you know, wearing flowers on your head and giving people hugs.
But yeah, seriously, man, I'm telling people on my side of things, people that I talk to in the neighborhood, hey man, it ain't all about racism. You know, don't look at it that way. I think it's more fear or prejudice about what's going on versus they just don't like a whole group of people. So hopefully what I'm trying to spit on my side can lighten the load on my side, you know, and what you're doing can lighten the load on the police side.
I don't disagree. You know, to me, I think it's really come to where it's not enough just to say you're not racist. And it's not enough to just say that you're not prejudiced against a certain group of people or a certain, you know, whether it's LGBTQ or whatever it happens to be. It's not enough just to not be prejudiced anymore. It's not enough to just not be bigoted. You've actually, in this day, time, and age, have to commit yourself to taking some sort of action to leveling the playing field and making things right. You know,
that's the way. I agree.
Otherwise, it's just going to continue as it is.
I agree.
All right, brother, man, I sure appreciate you interviewing with me. I'm going to call you back so we can chat just a little bit now about what we talked about and stuff like that. And, man, I think we got a lot more to talk about. I hope we can continue a little bit of this and stuff and dig a little deeper. But, you know, this is step number one for me, and I appreciate you being willing to talk to me, man.
Oh, yes, sir, most definitely. Call anytime.
All right, brother. Take care, man.
All right.
You take care.